Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you for joining us. Our guests are Paul Jenkins of the Anchorage Daily Planet and Dacia Eaton of KSK. Paul, Bill Walker announces he is running for governor as a Republican. Then he changes his mind and says, no, I'm going to run as an independent. Now, we know he unsuccessfully ran in 2010. He's making a comeback, but he's switched from a party to no party.
Well, he's going to run as an independent, and he got 33% of the vote against Sean Parnell when he ran as a Republican back in 2010. His odds of beating Parnell in a Republican primary now are nil. I think he did the right thing. He got out, became an independent. The people who benefit from this, of course, are Democrats, who have a hard time winning in this state unless there's a third party. This gives them somewhere else to suck off the votes from Republicans and add to their tally.
And is there any way of knowing what, or anticipating what Walker's base might be?
I am left to marvel at this. He started off in April by saying, I'm going to run as a Republican, and I'm against SB 21. I'm going to fight SB 21. I don't like SB
21. And remind us what SB 21 is.
SB 21 is oil tax revision that was put through the legislature this past year, or earlier this year, actually. And he's against that. He says he thinks it's bad policy. Well, when you pull out of the Republican primary, you're kind of out of the primary process. That's going to be resolved in the primary process. So he's likely to wind up in an election with no issue. So I'm just wondering, I can't imagine what he was thinking.
Won't he then campaign on leadership, decisiveness, getting things done?
And you know that gets you right down to the end, too. That'll do it for you.
And as you indicated, one more thing here, this will be a three-way race at the very least.
Race.
There may be some...
What he does get out of it is he gets to debate Sean Parnell. Sean Parnell last time did a rope-a-dope that was classic, probably ought to be taught in political science courses all over the country. You have a debate, he never shows up. So he winds up with his opponents killing each other, and then he wins. But this time I think he'll have at least one, two, three, four debates with him.
Okay, or maybe even more.
Maybe even more.
Dacia, the future of the popular downtown market is uncertain. There was a huge blow up over a proposal to move the market, change the market. Tell us about the blow up and the aftermath.
Yeah, this happened, it's been a couple of weeks ago now, but there was a meeting at the Anchorage Community Development Authority downtown, and they had room for 50 people, and by the time I got there, the room was filled up.
And the fire marshal was there, his representative?
They were getting ready to call the police, because there were so many people crowding in that were interested in this market situation downtown. They were turning people away at the door, and in fact I had to wait almost an hour just to get into the meeting to cover it. They turned away a couple dozen people at the door. So hopefully they'll choose a larger, more appropriate venue. Now they know there's so much interest. But the point is that there's a 7-acre parking lot downtown. This gentleman, Bill Webb, a businessman.
Near the Hilton Hotel.
A little bit further down.
Right.
But this gentleman, Bill Webb, he's a businessman. He's been running this for-profit market down there, and it's been very successful. He told me, around $7,000 a week to rent that lot, and about 300 vendors set up there. And it's been very successful. They bus people in from the cruise lines. Locals go down there. It's become less food-oriented, more trinket-oriented.
And some of those trinkets, I might add, are not Alaska trinkets, right?
Some aren't, but many are. Many are locally made, and it's been an incubator for what Mr. Webb says it's over 200 local businesses. So anyway, the point is they rent from the Anchorage Community Development Authority. They pay all this money. The business is working. And their lease is up, and it's been extended a couple years for another year. And that's why there was all the interest, and it looks like
who controls the lease?
The Anchorage Community Development Authority, and they extended it for one more year. They're going to be reviewing, however, the use of the lot because they want to make sure that they're making the most money they can. Anyway, it's become this fight with the downtown merchants. They say, hey, you're stealing all our business. you're taking all these people on buses down to this parking lot and they're spending all their money. We want them to, we want you to share. We want them to walk around on Fourth Avenue. So merchants proposed at the meeting, why don't you bring the market up to Fourth Avenue, make it more of a pedestrian thing. They can go in our businesses, they can go out to the market. The Bill Webb, of course, and the vendors really don't want anything to change. They think, you know, why should we change a good thing? This is working for us. And so they extended it for one more year, but the Anchorage Community Development Authority is going to meet this coming spring to resolve the issue.
So we're
going to
have the same fight in March or April or something?
It sounds like it. Meantime, they're going to take a big community survey to see what people of Anchorage think and where they want the market.
Okay. Paul, former State Representative Vic Coring, convicted of corruption, throws his hat into the ring in the Mat-Su Valley. He's running for local government up there for the Wasilla City Council. Be our interpreter. Why is he running and what are his prospects?
I don't have a clue. I really don't. I think he wants to rehabilitate himself. It's a city council seat in an area that's always been very friendly to him. In his view, he's done nothing wrong. The federal government done him wrong. He was tried, convicted, imprisoned. The imprisonment was set aside. He, instead of going back through the whole process, I think he pled out to one count of accepting a bribe. And for just for disclaimer, he accepted the bribe from my former boss, so who did 30 some odd months in jail. He's a go door to door kind of politician. He's got this homey approach. Somebody asked me the other day, what do you think? Do you think he could do it? I would not bet against him out in Wasilla.
Well, Paul, one of the things that struck me about this is that Mark Sanford, who was the governor of South Carolina and then was involved in a sexual scandal and made a comeback in Congress. Part of the reason he was successful is he had contrast. He was running against essentially a liberal Democrat, Stephen Colbert's sister in South Carolina. Right. And so a lot of people felt, well, I don't want to vote for this kind of person. They don't share my politics, so I'll vote for Sanford anyway. But that's not going to be true in this case. Is the opposition is just as conservative as Vic is.
I that's true. And I in the past he's never had a problem getting elected. And he's had some weirdness in his past. He lives in his office, he's got extension cords running to his mom and dad's motorhome.
He had his motorhome parked outside the legislative
and so
affairs
people,
office.
People have always forgiven him for that because he goes door to door and he listens to them. And if he does it again, I don't know what the odds are, what the bookies would say, but I just simply wouldn't vote against him. I really wouldn't.
Well, and the public, I think, some of the public anyway, will see that what he's doing here, it seems to me, is meeting his needs, not
That's
necessarily
right.
the needs of the public.
Right.
I need to be on that platform,
well,
that
he
stage.
Does. And he craves it. He needs it. He wants it. And Daily News has editorialized that he should sit down and forget it. I think other people will tell him the same thing. But in the end, it's going to be people in Wasilla.
Okay, and that's absolutely correct. Daisha, bar break. Hours are back in the news, that is closing hours. The Anchorage Assembly is trying to establish greater safety at the closing hour, which I believe is 3 a.m., isn't it?
That's right.
Okay. So, what's the plan, or I guess what we should say, what is the latest iteration of a plan?
They've been working on this, the Assembly and Assembly members talking about this, trying to find a solution, working with downtown businesses, bar owners, and neighbors for, it's been at least a year or more trying to figure out how do we stem the problems that are happening at bar break when everyone floods onto the street, they can't get enough taxis, and some are inebriated, and you have many different kinds of people from different parts of the city mingling together. And so they came up with this idea, why don't we have this safety hour where we'll allow people to stay in the bars, allow the bars to be open. This is especially helpful in the winter when it's cold.
Right.
And then let people filter out. The bars aren't allowed to serve alcohol. They have to keep the lights up. And so they finally passed something, I guess it was in March, but the bar owners didn't like it.
Because they had to sign up.
They had to sign up. It's a program they have to participate in. They have to get a permit to be open during that safety hour. And they didn't like the original legislation because the penalties were pretty high on the bar owners if they were found in violation, as in They would have had to shut down and lose money or face
for
large...
a period of time, not forever,
yeah,
not, permanently.
Not permanently, but they would have lost money, bottom line, or they would have been fined in some way. So this takes away all that, and if they get caught, you know, serving alcohol after the hour or something like that, there's a problem, then they go through an administrative hearing process, and the clerk's office, as I understand it, would make the final decision about whether or not to renew their permit. And so they took away those problems that the bar owners were concerned about, and now they're hoping they can get participation up. And
now, one thing I'm not quite clear on is the participation here mandatory, or is it once again?
It's voluntary. It's voluntary, and I mean, they're kind of thinking, you know, the administration and the assembly are thinking, well, it's in the interest of the bar owners.
That's the sales pitch.
To do
it's
this.
In your interest to participate, right?
Because right now they have kind of a bad reputation of, you know, pushing everybody out into the streets and having all these problems happen, and their neighbors and businesses aren't very happy about that. So this is a way to resolve that. I talked with APD, and they're just figuring out how they're going to enforce this. And they say they're just going to do regular patrols and, you know, just be watching. The main concern is actually individuals maybe hiding their drinks or something like that. And, you know, that's kind of a gray area. So what do you do if you're a bar owner and people start hiding drinks? So, you know, we'll see. There could be some unintended consequences here. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out over the next few months.
And as we know, regulating the alcohol industry, whether it's here in Alaska or other places, proved to be very tricky for a whole lot of reasons, and this is a very good example of it. Okay, Paul, Jerry Prevost, of all people, has a run-in with the Boy Scouts of America, and the Boy Scouts of America will no longer have a troop, and I believe it's a Cub Scout troop, meeting at the Baptist Temple. Explain.
In May, the National Boy Scouts decided to allow openly gay scouts to participate in the program while maintaining their ban on scout leaders being gay. Jerry Prevost has two packs, the Troop 1316, Cub Scout Pack 316, that are chartered to his church. They meet there, and he decided the Boy Scouts no longer stand up for what he believes they should be standing up for. And so he's severed his relationship with them, so these kids don't have any place to meet.
And we should note here that the Boy Scouts of America made this decision of how they were going to handle gay scouts or potential
right.
scouts after a long period of debate
acrimony and
negotiation, and in some degree people going to court.
Yep. And basically the people here, the scouts here, have had nothing to say about much of anything. They're just kind of at the long end of this rope. And he wants to sever the ties, and that's other groups in the community have stood up and said, look, Boys and Girls Club and other religious organizations, you can meet here, that's fine, you know, come over here with us. How this will play out for Prevost in the community, I don't know. I don't know how it'll play out in his church. I guess if it's his church, he can do whatever he wants, and if his flock doesn't like it, they can vote with their feet or their wallets, I suppose.
And that's really interesting, because his church, there is no diocese that he's part mm-hmm. of. He doesn't really, no. They have a board of directors over there, but no. Jerry doesn't report to an episcopate or a bishop somewhere, so this really is his decision. On the other hand, people might say this is totally consistent with what and who Jerry Prevost is. He has almost signaled this kind of thing of his dedication to biblical literalism long ago, and quoting Leviticus and other biblical scriptures.
And
in a certain sense, the community, liberal, conservative, whatever it is, shouldn't be particularly surprised.
They shouldn't be surprised. In the every gay rights issue that pops up in Anchorage,
that's true too.
His people are there. He's there. So it shouldn't be a surprise. And I suppose whatever goes on in that church going forward will be between him and his flock.
And the Boy Scouts
will
be there. They'll be someplace else. Okay.
They'll be meeting somewhere else.
Yeah, okay. Paul, Federal District Court Judge Ralph Beislein has upheld the government's approval of Shell Oil's Arctic spill contingency plan. This is an important victory for Shell, yet it's somewhat uncertain where Shell is going next year and in the next season of drilling in the Arctic. Tell us more.
Well, if you recall, the last drilling season was problematic for Shell. They had boats drifting away and things breaking
the
and not working. Right, exactly, all kinds of problems. And something called the Bureau of Safety and Environment and Enforcement, an Interior Department agency, approved their response plans. They had to come up with response plans and fix the response plans, prove to the government they actually had response plans, and they're going forward from that. Environmentalists have sued saying the approval violates environmental law, Endangered Species Act, and Clean Water Act. Judge Beastlein took the case. Now, the government's response was, well, you guys misread the law. Sorry, you're wrong. The law doesn't say that. And Beastlein ruled that, hey, surprise.
The judge will be all over me if I don't correct you. It's Beastlein.
Beastlein. Beastlein, Beastlein. Beastlein's good. He said, well, what they approved was the plan. They didn't approve any specific action, so it stands. The environmental interests have promised to appeal. So this is far from over, probably. But right now, that particular thing has been kind of shunted to the side for Shell. But Shell's got a lot more hurdles.
If the environmentalist or somebody else wants to appeal this, they'd have to go to the Ninth Circuit.
They've promised to appeal. Yeah,
the process is a very difficult one for them.
That's
so
right.
This Shell definitely won.
This is a big thing. This is a big thing for them.
Isn't the issue here that this really hasn't been done before? And so that's why there are so many questions.
This is all new territory. Yeah, this is. Nobody's got a spill plan for the Arctic. I mean, so what does your spill plan look like? Well, this is what it looks like. Well, I don't think that's right. Now they're going to argue about that for another year.
What happens now with Shell drilling, or do we know yet?
Well, what they've said is, well, this is set aside. This is something that's been resolved. I don't think it really has been, but it's resolved. And we're going to check our assets and see where things are and how we're doing and before we make any decisions. So, I mean, that's pretty much where they are.
Okay. The Daily News, Lisa Diemer, had a front page story today, a large one on the Port of Anchorage and various problems they've had in reconfiguring the Port of Anchorage, and a great deal of money was involved, and more or less a performance audit, and then to some degree, I guess, an audit of the funding shows that this project was terribly mismanaged. And what's striking about it to me is the old adage, success has many fathers and failure is an orphan. Nobody who was involved in this, the various mayors, Bill Sheffield, who was the head of the Port of Anchorage, others want to get involved with this because this suggests a failure of supervision, a failure of management. I'm just introducing this topic here. We're going to have a lot more discussion of this in the days ahead. There was also some questions about the misuse of 8A contracting opportunities. I'm not sure that anybody suggested that was corrupt in the old-fashioned sense of the word, but certainly people suggested it's not the way you should do things. And of course, that's the thing that Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri has been very interested in. It's the whole question of 8A contracting. So this is a story that is big at the moment, and it's going to get bigger. And I think maybe we could just leave it right there for a moment. Daisha, there's a new building in the works for the Alaska Native Charter School. Please explain what and where is the school and about the new building. And
yeah.
Viewers should know that they can go online and look at the Charter School's website if they want to learn more.
Yeah, absolutely. This is kind of a bright story here.
For a change.
Yeah. So school's about ready to start in the Alaska Native Cultural Charter School. They started in 2007. They had 210 kids last year. They were over in an old furniture store on Muldoon for several years. I mean, kids were doing their gym class in
presumably,
a storage closet. It's really storage
presumably
room.
That was a matter of price, right? They could get a facility at a bargain.
They were being resourceful. It was in an area where there were a lot of students who wanted to go to the school. So they were just getting started. But they recently rented a school that's sandwiched between the neighborhoods of Airport Heights and Mountain View. And it's the old Willowa School. And I think it was most recently the Pacific Northern Academy, which is a private school. And so anyway, it's one of these old Anchorage public schools, and they're, you know, throwing some fresh paint on, fixing it up, and now they have room for over 300 students, about 100 more students, and they actually have extended their lottery. And So they're growing. There's a lot of interest.
Why don't you explain that lottery to viewers who are unfamiliar with it? Or if you could give us a brief introduction to it.
Well, basically, you need to contact the Anchorage School District, and they will tell you how to do it. You could probably also call
But I guess the point is here, that's how you get admitted to the school is through a lottery.
It's a lottery because it's an Anchorage School District charter school, and you have to enter into the lottery, do some paperwork, and then your children are considered to enter that school. But the big story here is that the first year that the school started, achievement scores for the Alaska Native children in the school district and in the charter school that first year were at 44%. That means that less than half were passing standardized tests. And last year, that number was 76%. And that's significant. That's more than three quarters of the students in the school. It's also significant because the average is about 50% passing those tests in the Anchorage School District and nationwide. So they're doing something right. I talked with Patsy Shaha, she's the principal of the school, and said, what are you doing that's different, you know? And she said, you know, we just have good curriculum. It's the same curriculum they're using in the public school. And then we're infusing it with Native ways of learning. And we're making culturally relevant
more,
lessons.
Do they have more teacher support than they would have in the public school? Aides and so forth, or do you know?
I don't think there's any more bodies in there doing anything different, but they're really inviting the families to participate, creating a sense of community. A lot of the teachers that they have in the school taught out in the Bristol Bay region or in Western Alaska first. So they understand that when they're teaching math, they want to teach kids in a culturally relevant way. Maybe they're going to look at proportions and measurements by building a miniature fish rack, for example, something like that. And they're growing, and they're almost full already to 310, so it's pretty interesting.
And what grades of students go there?
That's also interesting. They started out just going first through sixth, I believe, and then they added preschool, they added seventh grade recently, and this year they're adding eighth grade.
Okay, so through middle school,
right?
Paul, the Matsu Assembly votes to put an alcohol tax before the voters of the Matsu, 5% on drinks sold in bars and restaurants and on package store purchases. Why now, and what are the measure's prospects?
Well, they anticipate that this would raise $1 million a year annually. They think
for the general fund.
For the general fund. Actually, it would go to two specific funds for services for emergency response.
As soon as I said that, I remembered. So, thanks for the correction. But
that's right. They've had a recent survey in the valley, and where teetotaling is not a big thing, according to the Anchorage Daily News story. But they've got the binge drinking in the valley, and alcoholism and substance abuse is a real problem. There are those who will argue for this tax, there already are, saying, well, this is a good way to reduce use of alcohol. It won't. And the other thing is it's a dollar-for-dollar step away from property taxes. It'll be a substitute. So for every dollar they take in, they'll take a dollar
and
less.
And isn't the argument made that the
tax.
Users should pay more for the problems they create?
That's correct. And will it pass in the Valley? The Valley is notoriously anti-government, if you will. I mean, it's at least leery of government. And the argument is, well, they've already wasted the money we gave them. We're not going to give them any more. So we'll see how that turns out.
And the other part of this could very well be it may depend on turnout, the kind of turnout you have in this election.
Exactly. It's October 1st. I'm not sure.
Well, that's their fall elections
exactly.
That we don't have.
Yeah.
I think most of the state still has fall municipal elections.
I'm just trying to think what kind of turnout that will be.
Well, maybe this will give people a reason to turn out. Okay. Dacia, an archaeologist from Brown University in Providence, has found a pre-contact village in northwest Alaska. This is really unusual. Great story.
It is, and I feel so lucky that I got to go out to northwest Alaska and visit around the Kayana area. This is unusual because of a partnership between Brown University, the Park Service, the Kobuk Valley National Park is where this site is. It's about 20 miles up the Kobuk from Kayana. And also the Kobuk River,
yeah.
Right? And the Kayana Traditional Council, the tribal council there, has also been involved in making this dig happen. What happened was they found a couple of bodies in one of these large subterranean underground houses, the relics of it. One was an adult male with a broken leg, and one was a child. And when you find a body on Park Service land, and it's also, you know, ancestors of the local tribe, a lot of times things just shut down. But these groups work together, and actually the local people are very interested in finding out about those people who live there. It's pre-contact, that means late 1700s, early 1800s. The houses are very large, they haven't seen any this size, and they're all connected by tunnels. And I just learned that they found the remains, skeletal remains, of a couple more people there just a couple days after I visited earlier this month.
We're going to run short of time here, but one thing that's intriguing, I think, to the viewer and to myself is, how did they know where to dig?
How did they know where to dig?
Or where to look, I guess, is
what
I They
had heard from local people for a long time that there was an ancient hub community, an ancient capital of the region that was in that area. And the archaeologist had been working there for a long time. His name's Dr. Doug Anderson, and had good relationships with the local people, and he made it happen.
So he established trust with them, and they
he did.
Reciprocated.
Yes.
Well, we're going to have to reciprocate out of here. We don't have any more time. I want to thank you very much for joining us on Alaska Edition. We'll see you right here next week.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org. Or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.